What are you at, everybody? And welcome back to Reality NSFW and our coverage of Big Brother Canada Season 9. We're here right after the eviction episode on week 7. I'm Zach Hacker, and I'm joined once again by Peter Brown. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to be back. I feel like our schedules were kind of not compatible there for a little bit, but finally, here we are, week 7, ready to break it all down again.
Yeah, life got in the way. There's been so much going on. This house has been even more chaotic than it was last time we talked. This week, certainly no exception. I was loving how much Arissa was having to dance up on the stage. They're like, this could flip. We'll just see. Like, just keep watching.
Yeah. It was normally a like I feel like if you've seen enough Big Brother, you know that the show will always encourage the possibility of a flip. And I would say 95% of the time, this encouragement is disingenuous because it generally does not happen. But this week, it did. An extremely rare event in Big Brother world, and I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, maybe that's why that stood out to me so much. She was genuinely just telling the truth. I'm used to the hosts of these shows lying to me and trying to see what crazy might happen, and it never does. But it did. So we haven't talked in a while. Whose game are you impressed with at this point? We're getting down to the stretch.
Yeah, it's it was interesting that I think it was maybe the previous episode, they were all sitting around the table being like, did you expect the last 7 to be this? And I'm like, they were all like, no, I didn't. I was like, neither did I. Yeah. I don't know that anyone did. Honestly, you gotta say Kiefer. I think he's the most well-rounded player in that house, the most dangerous player in that house, clearly, with what he was able to accomplish this week, being completely dead to rights, one foot out the door. Look, it takes a lot to genuinely impress me in Big Brother, and like Kiefer, this week, that's genuinely impressed me. So I got to say, like, how can you not pick that guy to win with what we've seen him be capable of up until this point?
Yeah, I mean, if Jed and Ty and Beth are worried that he's a big threat to win, guess what? Your moves just made him a bigger threat to win. Nice work.
Yeah, he has a great – he has the best argument, bar none, to get – if he's in a position, final two, which nobody in that house should let him get there. They've made a huge mistake in letting him survive this week. He has the best argument. I mean, look, he formed an alliance, this huge alliance. Essentially, they turned on him. They voted to evict him. The three people who are our closest allies voted to evict him in week 3. He comes back, says, you know what? Hey, it's cool. I still want to work with you. Mm-hmm. He looked like a fool, in my opinion, at the time to do that, but it worked out for him. The loyalty paid off. Clicked into them. Okay, he's the most dangerous player. We have an opportunity. Let's get rid of him. They nominated him, and he used conversation to get himself out of trouble. To me, just those two things alone, let alone his competition wins, his ability, how much the jury is probably going to favor him. I mean, my God, it's been a long time since we've seen such a clear jury threat in the game.
Yeah.
And that has been allowed to go through. I mean, hats off to him, but really, really questionable move for Jed and Ty specifically.
Yeah, I agree. Kiefer's so interesting because, yeah, if you start putting together his resume and omitting a lot of things, it's quite so much bumbling along the way that, like, I keep forgetting, like, oh no, he's genuinely, he has a very good case to make for himself. He's just made so many mistakes and been so goofy along the way of what he's deciding. And he's kind of been like the little brother to Jed and Ty this whole time. Yeah. And that has been a little difficult to watch of like, what is his motivation here? Does he just want to be friends with them? Is he playing a game? I'm not quite sure where he's coming from. And the talking to the camera of I'm the Grim Kiefer. Yeah. I'm the greatest legend that's ever played the game. Like, it's working for him, but it's weird.
It is. Look, I really liked Kiefer in the beginning of this season. Yeah. I feel like his character has become quite insufferable. However, he's still a great character, though. Regardless of whether you like him or you've grown to dislike him, which I feel like is the case for a lot of people, doesn't matter because he's a great Big Brother house guest. And a lot of people will interpret that as saying a great Big Brother player, which I would think that he also is, too, if you look at where he's been successful. Although I do agree it's been a bumpy road along the way. But Big Brother house guest to me means, dynamic personality. You're featured on the show. You're giving good content. Even if that content is delusional and, sometimes cringeworthy, it doesn't matter. You're entered. Part of being a good Big Brother house guest is providing entertainment for the show. Kiefer is number two in the diary room count for this season, just behind Victoria. Obviously, she was the star of the show. He's probably going to end up surpassing her if he gets to the end. So it really could end up being Kiefer's season in many ways. He's been messy. He's been unconventional. He's been all over the place. I did not like that he was basically crying and whining and thinking about quitting. I never like when people think about quitting and walk in the door when it looks like they're done. But you know what? Someone got in his ear or he got it in his own head and he made it happen. So that's more than I did. And that's more than basically everyone is able to do. So for that alone, I'm like, he's got my vote.
Yeah, I mean, he's got heat. I will take him any day over Tina in the house as a character. I think Tina maybe had better reads, was potentially a more conventional good social strategy game player, sure. But she was not good television. She seems very lovely. I'd love to have a beer with her or something, but
of course
didn't pop. Kiefer does. So, as a TV watcher, I'm happy about it. And this episode does open up with, will Kiefer save himself? Arista say, and the announcer saying, will the Haida Guajiro save himself? This should not even be a question, right? It is unfathomable that you would put someone up on a block and then take, like, go back on the move. Just take that back real quick. Like, hey, close ally. Yeah, we've turned on you. You're going home. A couple days later, never mind. Family.
Yeah, no.
That shouldn't be possible, right? That's a terrible move.
It defies all Big Brother logic. However, there is something that often happens where, you get down to this point in the game. And a lot of people, especially if they've got a handful of competition wins under their belt, there's air of like, well, you got to put the most deserving people through. Like the first people that really deserve to be here, bro, like they got to get to the end. And this is just something that people usually say as justification for their actions. And when push comes to shove, generally that isn't the case. That they'll keep the person who can be beat. I think everybody would have beaten Tina in the end. I'm not disparaging Tina the person, but I am disparaging Tina the player and Tina the personality, who was a dud on the show. Sorry. So every conventional Big Brother logic would say you keep that person, and this is the person that you drag to the end. That's your Karen. That's your Victoria from Big Brother USA 16. And the list goes on.
Sure.
But the fact that Jed and Ty eventually stuck to their guns of like, hey, he kind of does deserve to be here. And we did have this arrangement where it was going to us to the end and then we're just going to duke it out. Like so many people have, thought about doing in the show. And the fact that they, like, whether they were convinced to do it or whether they came to the conclusion on their own or whether it was halfway in between either or the other, the fact that it did happen, maybe that's a shift in the way that Big Brother works. Like, who knows? Maybe the more, quote, deserving a person is, the more likely they are to fight for their game in the end. This thing about dragging, undeserving players to the end just because they're an all but guaranteed victory. Maybe that goes away. Maybe that's better for the show. You could argue maybe that getting rid of a Tina, you get rid of the obvious goat. And so if that person's not there, then that allure, that temptation to keep that person in the game in favor of somebody who's a genuine competitor might go away. So like in a weird way, we might have seen a slight, bump in the, philosophy for Big Brother, going in a better direction because Kiefer is better for the show. He's better for the game. And it's more compelling as a viewer to watch the remainder of the Sunsetters in the final four, see who's going to win, who's going to pick the other off, what combination of the two will get to the end. that's a better narrative ending to the show than, okay, one of these two people are going to win and it's going to be over this third person who is useless. Because we've seen that before. It's boring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you, actually. Who saw this coming? Jed and Ty, the next evolution of the game. This when we look back at the Big Brother Canada history books, this will be a moment where they're going to be remembered for their strategy.
Right.
That is quite possible. No, I hear you. I mean, that's the way Survivor's gone in recent years, that, you know, it used to be find someone deeply unlikable and drag them to the end. It has gone away because everyone has started noticing, hey, that person is taking my spot in the end. I got to act them. Let's have some deserving people square off. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that's better television. I agree. But oh, my. Much like Kiefer, he's getting to the right spot for all the wrong reasons, I think. Right. And I think they are, too. But that's just the way the season's going. It's been a blast. So we open up. We see Tina and Kiefer on the block. Again, Tina is talking about what an emotional week this is going to be because she loves Kiefer. She is so sad that Kiefer's going to be targeted here. Did these emotions play any impact? Did Tina feel bad campaigning against Kiefer, or was she just incapable of campaigning? Because she didn't do anything on the feeds. She was doing like 5-minute conversations. That was about it.
Yeah, I just think her aptitude for the she seems like a very lovely, fun person. Obviously they like her. You know, you're not going to get as far as she did being unlikable. Okay. Sure, and sure. One of the you know, just being likable is a skill in Big Brother. Like, you know, being a good housemate, a roommate, whatever, that's part of what gets people through, you know. You know, you saw a little bit of it on the show with her trying to make an argument, but her trying to say like, hey, it's a game. I will go against Tara, my best friend, for several weeks. It's never going to play as authentic. It's never going to land as a genuine possibility. If you're receiving that information, you're always going to have this ping of like, well, she's just saying that to stick around, but she's never actually going to do it because of course, you're going to say anything, you know, whatever possible to make sure that, you know, you can keep yourself. And then you can completely flip on it if the situation presents itself. So it's just not believable for her. I think she kind of was on the sidelines for most of the game. And then when she finally had to go into action, it's just not in her wheelhouse, unfortunately.
Yeah, everyone was so high on her at the start of the season. And I think, you know, there's been this narrative of how to play Big Brother, which is get yourself in good really early, then go to sleep for the middle part of the game and then come out, make a couple big flashy moves at the end. You win. I don't think it works anymore. I certainly don't think it worked this season because it was way too back and forth. I think that she got herself in a good spot, but then by going to sleep and hanging out with Tara, she was out of sight, out of mind, and she was in no one's plans anymore. Especially the way these alliances fragmented so small. I think that might work in a really large alliance like we saw in Big Brother US 22. But I don't see that happening in a season like this where there's a bunch of threes and twos paired off throughout the house. Yeah. You can't just dip out like that and then expect to come back and have any authenticity to saying I've got your back, because you literally haven't for weeks on end.
That's the thing. You have to be in the mix. I mean, there is the, you know, people often will refer to that type of player as a floater, which is inaccurate. A floater is someone who floats to the power every week. So if there's a new HOH every week, suddenly that HOH, regardless of who it is, has a new best friend every week. That was the original terminology of a floater. Yeah. What the actual phrase is coaster. So Tina was coasting through the game. She wasn't active. She wasn't engaged in the main mix. Her strategy of remaining kind of likable and on the sidelines is not a terrible one, but in order to be successful with that, you need to have the ability to really turn it on when you need to. And she just didn't, you know, and it's anyone can win an AB competition. Anyone can win a rolling a ball through the right hole competition. Anyone can always theoretically win, but generally Big Brother Canada competitions are going to be skewed a little bit more physical. Mm-hmm. And Tina is not the most physical house guest. So it's you're risking so much by alienating yourself and kind of trying to do the like, you know, road move of like, you know, you change lanes out of the turning lane to get far ahead and then try to sneak back in to try to get to your exit. That's kind of what people do in Tina's position. And unless you're the savviest driver slash player, it's too much of a risk. However, I don't know what she could have done more, to be honest. Like, you know, I don't mean to continue to like kind of knock Tina down, but like someone in her position with her skill set, I didn't see where she could have really got in a better way. Like, I don't know what much of a better outcome would have been for her as opposed to just someone who's going to get picked off.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I will say about her, I think her reads were incredible. She seemed to almost every time she knew exactly where people were, where their head was at, what was about to happen before it happened. She just couldn't really do much with that intel. And when she did do something with it, it was to her own detriment, such as telling Kiefer to stop with the bomb bag in front of Jedi. Like, no, don't help him right now. That's not a good idea. But I mean, yeah, like, you know, she maybe had a decent strategy with where she's coming from. Like you said, she already doesn't have the physical piece. She already is a lot older than everyone in the house, so it's going to have difficulty, especially when you're having like a thruple be the dominant alliance. She can't get in on that.
So,
you know, she had the deck stacked against her a little bit. And yeah, I think this is kind of logical conclusions at this point. I think lessons for later house guests: if you don't have the physical piece, if you don't have the relating to them younger piece, you got to be more active. I think you have to really, really be in there constantly, mixing it up all the time. You can't disappear.
Which is look, a lot of people think that there's, I'm sure somebody watching that right now just had the thought ping through their head of like, well, how hard is that? It's very hard.
Oh, it is
exhausting. Like, think of you going to like a birthday party or something, or, you know, a work function, and having to put on that smiling facade for 2 or 3 hours or whatever it is. Like, you got to be Captain Charming so that your boss sees you and maybe wants to give you a raise or whatever the hell it is. Now do that for 20 of 24 hours every single day with the exact same people in a box that you cannot escape. It is mentally and physically draining to keep that up. It's like, you know, so many people dismiss Big Brother as like, oh, they just lay around for 3 months. How hard's that, bro? It's like, no, it is not just laying around for 3 months. And if you think it is, apply and find out. But yeah, to be that mentally engaged, like, it is so hard to do. And especially, yeah, like you said, you know, Tina's coming in. She is older. There is going to be somewhat of a generational or personality gap there. So for her to ingratiate herself into the big, cool person, hot group mix of dominant comp people and most vibrant personalities, she's got to be on all the time. And that's very, very hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely asking a lot. No, you're spot on. Of all the reality TV shows, Big Brother's the one I would not do. If they called me, we got a spot. No, I'm good. That sounds absolutely awful. And with the live feed scrutiny, no, thank you. That is all just exhausting mentally. I can't even think about that. No. We do see some really fun stuff that isn't game related this week. I don't know if fun was the apt word there, but we get this really, really beautiful conversation between Ty and Bray talking about the importance of representation. I was so glad this made the edit. I saw there's a much longer clip of this from the feeds. If anyone wants to check that out, it's all over Twitter, but this was a pretty lengthy conversation they had about systemic racism, about George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and generational trauma. And this was so cool because that has been such a big part of this season, but to have the house guests actually articulating this about why it's important that this cast was so diverse, this was beautiful. I'm so glad this made the edit, even in such a hectic week. So just kudos to the editors for being able to fit this in while still explaining the story of what went on with Cooper in this flip, because, man, they had a full desk this week.
I always love those little tangent moments in the episodes. And in fact, I wish there were more of them, really.
100%.
Because I always say, you know, Big Brother is supposed to reflect the world in which it's being played. So if you know, Big Brother is kind of like a time capsule in a way. You go back, you know, to like 2005, and you get a vibe for what they're wearing and their yeah. expressions, and like kind of get a sense of what's going on in the world, because you've got, okay, they're promoting, they, you know, they're promoting this movie and that's the challenge that they're doing that week, or like this celebrity pops up, whatever.
Yeah.
In this Big Brother Canada 9, the world that, you know, Big Brother is reflecting is a very chaotic and tumultuous one. That is, you have to be very delicate about, in so many ways. And you're right. It was a beautiful conversation between the two of them. They were completely spot on. Big Brother Canada has always done a great job from minute one of having a dynamic, range of people appear on their show. They've always, you know, went way above and beyond. This season, especially with everything that's going on in the world, obviously it's very important to have the show to some degree reflect that. Yeah. And this was, you know, there have been other smaller moments and stuff before, but yeah, especially now we're towards the tail end. It was nice to just have that as a kind of refresher to the audience that it's still very important to them in their heads, you know, like, you know, there's still craziness going on in the world. They've been locked away now for, including sequester for, 10 weeks almost. Oh. And so, you know, it's always going to be important. And I always like seeing important conversations that are reflective of the world happen in the show, because when 10 years from now, when you go back and watch, like, oh yeah, like my God, like, you know, think of where we were then and how far we've come now and the changes and yada, yada, yada. It's like, you know, that's what the show really is supposed to be about.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reality of reality TV. And it's one of the reasons I have such a love-hate relationship with how advanced strategy has become on Big Brother and on Survivor and on The Challenge. What I got into these shows for and what I started loving about them was these moments.
Yeah.
Because they can get together and play a game that is really compelling, but there's this realness to it. And there's this, I mean, it's incredible just to hear them articulate their points of view. I know we need to fit in all the strategy because they are playing a game for a lot of money. And that's what people love. But I love that we're still getting these moments even now, like, you know, 20 years into North American Big Brother format. Yep. This is still happening. And I think Big Brother Canada does it so much better than Big Brother US. And Big Brother Canada has to fit in all this goofy sponsor stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
there's a lot on their plate. Yeah. But it's always been true though that the personal connections inform the strategic decisions which give weight to the competition outcomes. That has always been true. And it is in that order of importance. I feel like, especially in Big Brother USA, but Canada is not immune from this failing or, you know, whatever as well, because sometimes I feel like the competition gets prominent importance followed by the excessive strategy. And then you can only find these little bits of humanity along the way. And I don't like that inversion of the show, because, you know, Big Brother has always been the same. The strategy might shift here and there, and the casts might be a little different all the time. But fundamentally, you put a bunch of strangers in a house, and like the general sentiment of most seasons are going to be variants of the same thing within a certain measure. But that's what's compelling is you have these ordinary people in an extraordinary environment, and we stopped focusing on the ordinary everyday, people relating their experiences to the camera and then having to play a game and then having to play this weird competition and how it all fits in. It's now like, here's the competition and here's the conversation that led to it. And yes, also they did a funny thing where they cried. Like, either balance it more or like find a way to make the people are watching for the people. Not like, look, they put a lot of money into those competitions and they're beautiful and they're so much fun to play and they're great. But man, they spend a lot of the episode time on these competitions. Like, you'll get three commercial breaks of competitions of people moving a block either to the left or to the right. And it's like, we don't need that as a television show. Give us people being people. And then that creates excitement for the things that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that breakdown that it starts with the relationships, then it goes to strategy, and then it goes to the way the competition shakes out. I think, you know, my notes to the editors or to the producers would just be start the storyboard at the beginning, not at the end. I think They're starting with what result they know they got, and then they're working their way back of how do we tell that story. And I think we need to start with where did this week begin? Where are these relationships? And then let's weave it as we go, because I think that would, you know, I think you said it perfectly that it goes in that order. And I think we're getting it told to us in reverse order by the super hyped announcer who I love.
He's great. He's awesome. Like I'm not, like I love the, how extra to use the parlance of the youth, that the Big Brother Canada and their video packages and voiceovers are. It's awesome. Like, look, they do the best video packages of any Big Brother, that I've seen, but, it's the people that we watch, because the people are always going to be interesting.
Yeah, 100%. Speaking of the people, Kiefer and Brayden have a good relationship that we have not gotten to see a whole lot of. But Kiefer is selling out the Sunsetters, the name, the symbol, the members. He's letting Brayden have it all. And this is the most happy I think I've seen Brayden in 45 days or whatever we're in here. He's loving it. He loves the tea getting spilled before bedtime. Is this going to come back to bite Kiefer at all? This seems like, ooh, Bray would love to throw this out at some point.
It is a, oh boy. Yeah. It could look, I am sort of disappointed in Brayden, both as a character and a player. I feel like his connection, with Austin could have been great. Obviously that didn't work out. I feel like, I don't know, I'm a little underwhelmed with what we've seen for him so far. But if Brayden somehow, and look, it's not out of the realm of possibility, you string together 3 good weeks at the end of Big Brother, suddenly you have a winning argument. So if you're in there, it can happen. So this moment of Kiefer thinking that, okay, I'm done, I'm out, it reminded me, there's a really great clip from Big Brother Canada season 1 where I think it's Tom and Liza in bed, and Tom is attempting to communicate to Liza like who's in Quattro basically, and he like blinks to her like in Morse code who the alliance is, and it's very funny. And then Tom goes, and then Liza goes right after. But had Liza not gone in that double eviction, suddenly she has a wealth of information that she can use, you know, to her advantage. Like Liza, if she makes it through that double eviction, the trajectory of that season changes considerably, in my opinion. But anyway, fast forward to what the current version of this exchange, and Brayden now has leverage and information and a tactical advantage over Kiefer. So if Brayden's not going to be in trouble this week. But if he wants to try to push things even further in the Brayden Tara connection, in which they will have to form in order to move forward, even if they keep Kiefer as a third, even if they go like those three against the trio, then it puts Brayden above Kiefer theoretically in the pecking order, because he's got more relevant information and can use that against him, especially to form a close bond with Tara. So this, like, look, Brayden doesn't have much of a storyline so far. But again, like, you think finale night, if he's there, this could be his moment to at least start on some semblance of a win trajectory. If a few bounces go his way, and it doesn't take much with 2 odd weeks left in the game.
No, I'm hoping this is Chekhov's gun, that this is this seed has been planted, and Brayden is going to use this to take someone out at some point, or at least to get himself in a position, because right now I've seen a whole lot of Brayden laying on the couch, feeling sorry for himself and being aggravated and not playing a whole lot. But hopefully Chekhov's gun is smoking. And speaking of things that are smoking, the pepper challenge. What was the point of this? So I was watching this on Video Brother, like everyone in the USA, and I think Global TV was on to us. It got cut more than I've ever seen the stream cut in my life. So I missed most of this, but I guess they're eating some spicy foods. Sure, that's fun.
Yeah, look, Big Brother makes you do weird stuff sometimes. This kind of felt like, I don't quite understand why the rewards are always it's a party or like you get a barbecue or it's a pizza or like whatever. So like those things are good, of course, like but think of some more like thematically relevant like reward or like theming thing or like I don't know, because like just eating the peppers, which is funny, I guess. Like, yeah. You know, it feels like a very Big Brother UK thing. Like, here's something weird. Eat it. If everybody eats something, you get a prize. But, like, the reward being we get to eat other food seems like just such a womp, womp, womp. Like, in the house, you're like, all right. Like, we get to, like, pretend to do something that's slightly different than what we normally do.
Yeah. Give them a fiesta or something. Like, right. Something on theme. Yeah.
Something.
I don't know. But yeah, I'm not a fan of really spicy peppers. When I was like 12 years old, my dad pulled a prank on me and removed all the bell peppers from like the fajitas for dinner with habaneros. And I took a big old bite and I was in tears and chugging milk at the family party. So bad memories. So no, yeah. No. Thanks for the trauma, Big Brother Canada. I hated that segment. I'm glad the feed's here. Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, so we cut back into the game and we see a little bit of Tina and Kiefer's pitches. And Tina doesn't really say a whole lot, but Kiefer starts saying that to Jed, he's saying keeping me is actually the big move. You might think getting rid of me is a big move, but keeping me is even bigger. The fact that this works, this doesn't make any sense, man.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. Jed sort of reminds me of Emmett at times, and kind of like cold, calculating, like, you know, he's friendly, but also has this just, you know, gamesmanship, malicious side. And I say that in the most complimentary terms possible. You know, Emmett's a close friend still to this day, and I think one of the best Big Brother Canada players that we have. So Jed sort of sometimes reminds me of Emmett in the way that he interacts with people one-on-one. But I just cannot, maybe I'm partial to Emmett cause he's my friend, but like, I cannot see Emmett falling for the, hey, actually it's the big move to keep the biggest threat in the game and not dump them. I'm very, curious to talk to Jed after he gets out and be like, what pushed you in that direction? Because maybe they just really do love Kiefer. Maybe it is that brotherly bond and they just want to keep him around because he's a friend. You know, they'd rather hang out with Kiefer than Tina. Okay, that's maybe possible, but just from a game bot logic, put yourself first. He has potentially shot himself in the foot. And this is a guy who, you know, if Kiefer goes, the Jed win trajectory looked like, you know, you're probably going to place your bet on that if you're going to Vegas. Oh, yeah. And now it's much, much more muddled.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's funny thinking of the Emmett comparison. Like, if Emmett is like a wolf in sheep's clothing, Jed is like a sheep in wolf's clothing. Maybe he's like knit suit on and he secretly can't do anything, but he looks a bit threatening.
I'm with you.
I don't know. But yeah, this is awful. I think if Kiefer goes here, Jed is far and away the favorite to win. I don't see who's going to take the move against him other than Tara, but like they shouldn't be losing comps to Tara. So, I mean, we'll see later, but she finally got her win here, which I think a lot of people are rooting for, but see what she does with it. And this week looks to be weird again.
And when it comes to eating better and consuming less sugar, let's be honest, most healthy snacks don't taste very good. They don't fill you up, and they certainly don't satisfy your cravings. This episode is sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but with less than 1 gram of sugar.
Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars contain less than 1 gram of sugar, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and they're only 150 calories.
They're great for anyone following a keto lifestyle and the perfect snack for anyone who is trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm personally not a keto eater, but I love these nut and seed bars. I try to have one of these always on me for a snack because I'm usually trying to train for a new running distance I'm trying to hit. I think 2021 is going to be the year for my first full marathon, And I think Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars are going to help me get there because they're giving me the energy I need and the nutrition I need to make those health goals possible.
Wow.
Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars have the perfect balance of sweet and salty, a crunch from whole nuts and seeds, but still manage to be soft and chewy. How do they do it? They come in delicious flavors like sea salt, dark chocolate, pecan almond, and my favorite, no contest. Love these so much. Game changers, if you will, the peanut butter dark chocolate.
So good. They're perfect for a quick snack to satisfy your sweet tooth without any guilt. Enjoy Monk Pack Keto Nut and Seed Bars as a quick breakfast, while running errands, or after a workout.
In addition to being keto friendly, these bars are gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO. So with no soy, trans fat, sugar alcohols, or artificial flavors.
They really taste incredible, and you can't beat the low sugar nutrition or taste they provide. And by shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store by getting Monk Pack delivered right to your door.
Try it for yourself and see. And we have a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering promo code SURVIVOR at checkout.
And Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer.
So to get started, just go to monkpack.com, that's MunkPack.com, and select any product and then use promo code SURVIVOR, they love it when we do that, at checkout to save 20% off your purchase.
Monk Pack, delicious, nutritious foods you can count on, and we thank them for sponsoring the Reality NSFW podcast.
Are you ready to enter the wild again? There's a chance no one has seen your balls in a few months. Don't ruin your first post-quarantine date with a ball fro. Would you show up to your first day of school without a haircut?
Manscaped is here to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Johnny, how's your grooming been lately?
Oh, man, I am sleek, aerodynamic. I'm like that new Tesla. I mean, I got a bunch of 5Ks coming up. I got a bunch of half marathons coming up. Oh, man, I'm going to run so fast. There's no friction between Johnny Fairplay, little Johnny Fairplay, and home sweet home.
Oh, that's good news, because Manscaped is here to help everyone else get on that level with their Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer. It's the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and advanced skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced while preparing yourself for post-quarantine life. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essentials Kit. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining.
The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with the Manscaped Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner. Now, the Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant, which ensures that your afternoon stroll doesn't end with your balls sticking to your leg. They call that bat winging. You can eliminate that with a little manscaping, courtesy of the Crop Preserver. But the Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner for your balls. It's made with a soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts that give your balls a boost. Now, subscribers to the Peak Hygiene Plan get a new replacement blade refill for your Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. Don't be using no old razor. Come on. And making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean.
The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas. Treat yourself for making it through quarantine with the Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SURVIVOR at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use promo code SURVIVOR. They love it when we do that. And your first date will thank you.
But we see some inner dynamics going on between the isosceles triangle, the sauce between Jed, Ty, and Beth. And we start seeing what are these relationships like? How do they want this to play out? And we start to see Beth getting a little salty that Ty and Jed are forming this close bond. I mean, if you notice, all the conversations that we get in the episode of Kiefer campaigning to stay are with Jed and Ty. Beth is almost never there. This has got to be terrible for Beth's game that they kept Kiefer, right?
Very bad. And she's aware of it too, and has been for some time now, that she's like, I think Beth is a pretty good Big Brother player, generally speaking. Yeah. And I definitely agree that she, in the correct position, would be cutthroat enough to put herself first, which is, again, something very hard to do. I like Beth as a player, and I understand her frustration that she is going to feel like the optics are that she is the third in this saucy trio, simply just because she's a girl and the other, even though she's won stuff, the other guys have won stuff too. And it's just this weird thing of like, oh, well, you know, the guys carry the girls, which is stupid. Yes. Beth is a bit better Big Brother player than both Jed and Ty. I don't think that any reasonable person would argue against that. But Beth now, this frustration is definitely getting to her. And it's actually good of Jed and Ty to sort of go into business for themselves because it helps their arguments at the end. Mm-hmm. And so Beth maybe didn't have the best reaction to this. Like maybe you bite your tongue on that a little bit because now you've expressed to your, at least one person in your alliance, your frustration with them going into business for themselves. And that's probably not a great thing. Kiefer is obviously closer to Jed and Ty than he is to Beth. Beth is really only close to the guys, although she does have that maybe sort of back pocket Tara option. But yeah, it's not a Kiefer staying significantly hurts Beth's chances of winning too, because I gather that they're probably not going to like her for whatever reason. Like, I don't think the jury is going to be pro Beth. The internet is certainly not pro Beth. I think she realizes that she's going to have a tricky time. She'll have a tricky time making her argument if she's in the position to, and that's going to be frustrating. And that frustration might end up being her undoing, unfortunately.
Yeah, we're starting to see some of that boil over. And unfortunately for Beth, I can only imagine how difficult it is in the house if you don't have a person you can confide in and talk through your emotions and thoughts. And Beth's person is Jed. And when all of her frustrations are about Jed, you get these blow-ups. I mean, we saw also Tara starts to get in her head and Beth is realizing I'm not going to get any credit for anything last night. And she goes and immediately gives all of that information to Jed, which is, that's not good because Jed is becoming aware of this as a potential problem. And we see Kiefer and Ty talking and they both are in agreement that Beth will cut Jed. So this is becoming public knowledge that Beth is considering going into business for herself.
Yeah.
Which is not good when you've got these three boys now seemingly in a long haul. I can't imagine a scenario where Jed and Ty go after Kiefer before Final Four now after this, but every week. So who knows what's going to happen. Kiefer, I don't believe a single word Kiefer says about what his plans are. So because it's a one person, he's never going after Jed and Ty, and then to another, he's ready to take a move at the triangle. Right. So who knows what Kiefer would do if he had any power. Word, but Beth is going to have to do something. And I'm glad she's aware of it. Like, much like you, I think Beth is playing a good game. I think she's been really entertaining. I like the way she's been able to juggle these different relationships that are really unconventional. And she's gotten herself in a really ironclad spot in the house. I don't see who's going to target her unless she makes herself a target. She's just going to need something because, like you said, women are not given as much credit in the end game, and she's going to be seen as carried by, I mean, the two huge dudes who do look like huge threats. So I guess you can kind of see she's hiding behind them. But that's just optics. That's not been what's going on. As she said herself, I sit up here with you guys and explain why you need to make the move and how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Do it and get all the credit. So
yeah, that's really frustrating. And like, I can identify with that to a certain degree where you're sort of tutoring people on, you know, Big Brother 101. And then they're like, oh yeah, that does make sense. And they do exactly that. And you know, they look like they're a genius and you look like you're an idiot. Look, I make myself look like an idiot enough. I don't, you know, and Beth as well at times, but her best case scenario, I think, is to be in the final four with some combination of, well, Tara for sure. Kiefer and Braden is probably Beth's ideal final four, which is going to be that means that the two big boys have got to go in real quick succession. It's going to be real hard. Even if one of the Jed or Ty replaces either Tara or Braden, probably preferably Braden for just thinking about Beth and her opportunity to get to the end is probably going to be best for her. But yeah, with the way things shook out this week, and then especially with the Tara HOH, well, Tara HOH actually works in her favor, but it's I don't know. I had completely lost interest in this show last week after Victoria and Rohan left. I was like, it's done. It's dead. The two best characters are gone. The season is finished. Nothing interesting is going to happen. And then this week, I'm like, well, we've got some scenarios again.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see how this is going to shake out. Although I think Arissa sprung some bad news on us. Well, we'll get into the secret double eviction. I don't love that, but so we're at the point here where Jed and Ty go back on their decision, and they go and tell Kiefer, never mind your family, we don't want you to go home. And it's happy tears this time. More tears have never been shed in the Big Brother Canada household. And I said last night, I'm a sympathetic crier. I hate when this happens, when I have to podcast later, I have to look away from the screen, or I'm gonna start just watching them. It's terrible. But I, you know, Kiefer pulled it off. This is amazing. I don't know how much this is his doing, how much this is the dithering and waffling of the triangle, but it has happened. Grim Kiefer is here. And Beth should be pissed, and Beth should be trying to make a move. This is my biggest takeaway here. This is not good for her, but I think it's, I actually like him staying for Jed. I don't like that Jed did the move of putting him on the block and taking him down, but I think that he still remains a shield for Jed. He still remains a number for Jed, and he has shown an ability to win comps. So I think it's not the end of the world for him, but certainly if I was Beth, I would have been trying to make moves to still get Kiefer out here.
Right.
But we get to the vote. I thought the speeches were pretty standard. Nothing. There was no raps. There was no goofiness. I just kept it real. Okay. And all but Tara vote to evict Tina. All right.
Well, I don't know who Ty voted to evict, because he didn't give a name. Jeff Probst would have never put up with that. Like, look, not to insult Arissa, who I love more than anything, but like, what he did, like, look, I love the hand gestures. Alec and I basically invented hand gestures for Big Brother Canada, but like, he didn't even give any version of Tina's name whatsoever. It's like blue something.
Blue line or something.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. But I was like, is she going to let him get away with that? She let him get away with that. Like, you know, I've seen episodes of Survivor where Jeff is like, I can't read this. Wrote it.
Yeah. In Survivor Thailand, there's the Denver Diva vote, and Jeff's like, no, who did this? Calls out Clay on the spot. Fantastic. Yeah. I was shocked Arissa let that go, because I have to think there's a large segment of the viewership who had no idea what was happening right there.
Yeah. I was very confused too. Like, you figure it out, you know, it's like, it's obvious what he's doing, but still, I was like, whoa, that's, that doesn't really, get a pass in Big Brother, like, ever.
No. Well, we get to the HOH comp after Tina goes out. Arissa kind of yada yadas the interview. That was not a very lengthy interview, but I don't think she was expecting Tina might give her a whole lot. So that's all good. We get to the audiobook quiz comp. And there's no jury segment tonight either, but like I said, there's a lot to pack in. I am interested to see what we're going to get of the jury house. But I was super glad we're going to find out who the HOH is during the episode. I love when that happens and we can come on here and break it down. So they have to answer these quiz questions about former house guests' responses, and kind of revealing some secrets. We find out, LaToya was a cop all along. Ha ha. And so all of this gets revealed. And ultimately Tara is the new HOH. A lot of people on the internet are going to be so happy. Well, people hate Tara, but they want Tara to be HOH because she'll take a shot.
True. So, fair enough. That's a correct observation, I think.
So, you know, it's weird. Internet fans are very unusual to me. I can't wrap my head around it. We can love the individuals in the throuple, but we just want someone to take a shot at them. So,
well, I think what it is, like I compared it earlier, I said the throuple is essentially the third wheel. And for those who forget, the third wheel was Kelsey, Jared, and Raul. the sauce are essentially that same basic alliance.
Yeah.
And in terms of their function in the game, except for they have been largely dominant without any kind of resistance. And in any show, in any story, whether it's a movie or, you know, nobody likes a blowout in the Super Bowl. They like the comeback or the close one. And it comes down to the last play, the last minute, and blah, blah, blah. So, like, in season four, you had Tim and Cassandra, which were counterbalance, and you had the Pax Bros, which were counterbalance. And so you had this, like, mixture of, like, well, they're all kind of at odds with each other at all time, and there's no one real dominant force. And so the sauce in this season, yeah, they've been tremendously successful. I said on Twitter, I was like, well, the Sunsetters have been the most dysfunctionally successful alliance in maybe Big Brother Canada history, because they seem to, like, keep winning in spite of themselves every week. And nobody likes to see that. It's the reason why, the Pretty Boys, which are, like, I'm sorry, Kiefer, but the Pretty Boys are the most dominant, successful alliance in Big Brother Canada history. They are the best alliance in Big Brother Canada history. Adam and Dane are two of the best, are the two best comp players in Big Brother Canada history. I think Kevin Martin and Dimitri's are probably the other two in terms of just, like, you know, number of competitions won. Season seven, look, I love all those guys, but season seven is not my favorite season because it's one group steamrolling a bunch of people who are pretty bad at Big Brother. This season, it's not a conventional steamroll in that, like, they're all just, like, cackling at how great they are. And it's like, it's just, you know, an unwritten rule that every week they're just going to be successful and that's it. They're a little bit more dysfunctional, which makes it a little bit more compelling. But it's still one alliance essentially taking a no-damage run throughout the game. And that's boring. That's boring television, and it's a boring game. It's really hard to do. So hats off to them. Like, congratulations for making it this far. I feel like they've gone as far as they can without the not being nominated thing, unless Tara makes a horrendous decision in the next few days. But, really hard to do, but awful to watch as a Big Brother show because people like the balance and the shift and the, you know, Tara was saying, like, you know, last week or whatever, like, it's not a team game. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And it sort of depends on, you know, what you're doing. But Big Brother, I think, works best when it's a bunch of, like, pockets of twos and threes everywhere and it shifts all the time. If you've got the pockets, but it's still one alliance winning all the time, it's like, ugh, like, good. But also, like, come on, give me something else.
Yeah, no, I mean, we want some degree of resistance. Like, it's not a satisfying winner if they had to overcome no adversity. No. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it did. I was so compelled at the start of the season, the way this house broke down. We've got a three. We've got another potential three. We've got a duo. We've got a couple singles. Let's see how this shakes out.
Yeah.
But what happened was the duo got... The Cairo got broken up, and then you've got all these floating singles who became like satellite forces for the trio. And they're, even though they're not really part of the group, they think they are, and they're all just doing the trio's bidding.
Yeah.
But even more frustrating to that is I think that the trio have no idea that that was done, like, intentionally. They're, I think of, like, the Hayden and Lane and Matt Hoffman and whoever, that the Brigade, they all, like, intentionally created these parachute alliances. And we're like, this is our strategy that is articulated on the show. You can hear them explain it. The triangle this season, absolutely not. I do not think they know why Kiefer is working for them. I don't think they have any idea why Victoria was doing what they wanted. They're just like, oh yeah, we're good. We're good. Yeah. Like, there's no strategy to that. It was not intentional, and it's even more frustrating. They are, like, failing and bumbling upwards.
Right.
Good game despite themselves.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, you know, points for originality. I mean, I suppose that we haven't seen that before, but it's still, you know, regardless of the way you get there, the outcome has still been the same, which I think is, you know, why people are maybe pretty frustrated.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating. I can laugh at it, certainly. So I'm done being frustrated with it. I'm ready to just laugh because the last couple of weeks have been, I want these people to pay for their mistakes.
Right.
There needs some punishment for playing so sloppily, and there isn't going to be. And I guess I'm okay with it. I can just laugh now.
Yep.
But
I have maybe the most The morbid part of me hopes that this happens, but the fan of the show, I hope, doesn't happen. So here, let me lay out this scenario for you.
Okay.
Because I feel like we're getting to the Arissa twist part.
Yes.
So Tara has won HOH. Good for Tara. She will nominate two people. I assume that's going to be two-thirds of the sauce. And then the third one will be the backdoor option. Unless that third person wins veto and takes one of the two off, then I expect Kiefer would be the backdoor. In no scenario should Brayden ever touch the block this week. And if he does, my God. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's assume that one of those four in the Sunsetters are gone. But then we've got three of them left, and it's probable that they win the second half of the double eviction.
Yes.
And it's then also very possible as a measure of retribution that Tara goes up and out.
Yes.
So if it's, let's say, Tara versus Jed or Beth or literally any of the four of them, I feel like the Sunsetter person will beat Tara, and then functionally – Tara will have been evicted on her own HOH week. And I it's never going to happen again. So I kind of hope that it does. Just like always give me something new, you know, morbid TV fan hopes that this happens, but my God, what a, absurd outcome. If we're talking about Tara being essentially the one evicted last week, or next week when we do this show, then something has gone terribly wrong, but very funny.
I mean, the way you lay that out, I almost don't see many other options of what will happen.
Right?
So, and that comp is definitely going to be not a crapshoot. It's going to be
physical running. You got to climb a rope and do a puzzle, and then do a back spring into a pool of alligator. Like, it's going to be something. Yeah. That is going to favor all of the people who are not Tara.
And Tara, this is what you get for complaining all season that you can't do any of the competitions.
Right?
You're going to get the doozy of all competitions when your life is on the line. This is what you get for complaining.
It's not going to be an A-B. Like, how much do you remember from the video we showed you? It's going to be something complicated and fast because they got to work within TV time. So it's going to be like, it's not endurance. Well, maybe. I don't know. They in season three, they did all the pre-jurors. They hung them on a rope. And it's like, whoever stays, because go. Maybe they do something like that in the morning, or I don't know. It's possible. But the fact that, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And it's like, it's almost like the anticipated outcome that Tara, it'd be like, on Wikipedia, you'll see week HOH, Tara. Week 8, evicted house guest, Tara.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm here for the entertainment.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see the wiki updated with that stat line. That's fantastic. Right? I think that is the expected outcome. Fake double eviction. Tara will go home on her own HOH week. Oh, that's brutal. And again, they're like, I guess they have to win some comps to get there. But again, for doing basically nothing because they're the only people left, one of them will win the comp because they've got like a 80% odds of winning the competition with four of them against Brayden. So, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, look, Brayden's been close. They even kind of, again, they hinted on it at the show, like, hey, he's been like second or third all the time. And it's like, you don't really think of that when you watch the episodes, but in the house, that's really important. Like Suzette in season one, Suzette was always in the top, two and four. Like if she didn't win, she was always right there in the mix. And it's like, damn, like Suzette doesn't look like the most athletic person, but like she ran through the maze real quick, or she always would surprise you. So like those people who are just percolating, they're always right there on the cusp of winning. If you're around long enough, you're going to come due. So maybe Brayden can pull it out and they send two Sunsetters out and then, only one comes back. Like that's the best scenario for kind of like the other side of the house, we'll say. Yeah. But I don't know. I got a weird feeling that we're going to see Tara being evicted on her own HOH, which is, it's going to be one for the record books.
Yeah. Yeah. The only way for that not to happen, right, would be if Brayden wins veto.
Right.
And then Braden wins HOH.
Yes. So we got to really rely on Braden to come out of nowhere for a back-to-back comp wins in just a few days. So
we've got two people that haven't won pretty much anything all season are going to have to pull out back-to-back comp wins else we're getting Tara going home on our own HOH week. So this will be fascinating. I can't wait to see what this week holds. Unexpectedly this season, just when you think you can put it down, it packed some punches. I've had a blast so far. So, Peter, thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you next week, and we can talk about what goes down with this fake double eviction. But thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for following along as we're covering Big Brother Canada 9. Make sure you subscribe, give us a like, and you can find the audio podcasts at realitynsfw.com, the video podcasts at youtube.com/realitynsfw. We thank you so much. Good night.
By the time you feel thirsty, it's too late. You're already dehydrated. You can't focus and you feel tired.
Drinking enough water is critical for a healthy lifestyle that you're trying to maintain. It increases your brain power, boosts your productivity. It can prevent headaches and it'll increase your focus. Not only that, it improves your skin and mood, and it can help with your digestion and give you energy. Wow, it also prevents bad breath and can help you lose weight. But how much water should you drink each day? 10 cups? A gallon? The good news is that it doesn't have to be so complicated. That's why I start my day with Hydrant, because Hydrant helps you hydrate faster.
Hydrant has created a refreshing electrolyte powder that you mix directly into water to more efficiently and effectively hydrate your body. It hydrates you quickly and keeps you going for longer. Each rapid hydration mix has the four essential electrolytes that your body needs: sodium, potassium, magnesium, and zinc, and it packs a punch to help your body hydrate fast and stay hydrated. If you're looking for that extra boost of energy, there's also Hydrant Plus Caffeine, which contains 100 milligrams of caffeine from green tea. Hydrant is backed by research. The formula was developed by an Oxford scientist. It also is loved by pro athletes, top performers, celebrities, and has thousands of five-star reviews.
It's made with real fruit juice powder. It's delicious and refreshing, and it comes in a variety of flavors, including iced tea, lemonade, and fruit punch. My favorite personally is the grapefruit. It's a classic and I go back to it. It's delicious. Plus, this stuff is backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love it, you can send it back for a full refund. You really need to try it for yourself to see what I'm talking about. It tastes incredible and it works.
Well, Hydrant starts at just a buck a packet for a 30-day supply, and you save even more with a monthly subscription. And it's so easy to get. We've got a special deal for our listeners to save 25% off your first order. We're not kidding here, folks. 25%. Go to drinkhydrant.com/survivor and enter our promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. That's drinkhydrant.com/survivor and enter promo code SURVIVOR for 25% off your first order. That's drinkhydrant.com/survivor and our promo code SURVIVOR to save 25%. And we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid, but I had to give it up because I realized it was full of sugar and junk that you really shouldn't eat. I've been trying to cut down on carbs, sugar, unhealthy food, and realized I basically can't eat anything anymore. I've been drinking protein shakes and powders for years to help with my workouts, but I finally found a delicious way to get my protein before and after my workouts. And with the New Year's, we're all trying to eat better, but healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has some amazing flavors you'll love. I know I do, but without all that bad stuff.
Hey, we're talking 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. That's only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. We've got some exciting news. Magic Spoon will be releasing 2 amazing new flavors this month for a limited time only. We're talking about cookies and cream and maple waffle. Do I now have 2 favorite flavors of Magic Spoon that I haven't even tried yet? Because I'm looking at my dream board right in front of me, and what's there? Cookies and cream and maple waffle. This is a dream come true. And if that isn't the most comforting, indulgent combination, then I don't know what is. This is the ultimate treat yourself combo. So make sure you get some while you can for a limited time. Or build your own box. Available flavors to build your very own custom bundle are cocoa, one of my faves, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, and cinnamon, my absolute fave. Now, if you're listening in Canada, Magic Spoon now ships there as well.
That sounds about perfect for the maple waffle. If you want to get in on this, go to magicspoon.com/survivor to grab the new limited edition cookies and cream, maple waffle, or a custom bundle of cereal to try it today. And be sure to use our promo code SURVIVOR at checkout to save $5 off your order. This offer is now good anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, but only when you use our code at checkout.
And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/survivor and use the code SURVIVOR to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck.
Researched and developed for 3 years to be made by people, not patients, Lucy's created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine in cherry ice flavor. Each and every flavor actually does taste great, and it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, even in the gym. I'm so excited that Lucy is sponsoring us because one of my best friends in the world, he's trying to quit smoking. His girlfriend's been getting on him for years. He's a big menthol smoker, and the wintergreen flavor is a really nice substitute for him that he absolutely loves. So this is the thing that you need to check out if you've been trying to kick your tobacco habits.
I have a family member that's tried the pomegranate, and they say it's one of the greatest tasting gums they've ever had. We're not talking nicotine gum. We're talking any gum. So if you've been discouraged by other nicotine gums, try the pomegranate. And also for the lozenge, the cherry ice is allegedly the best. And you know what? I believe them. But as far as enjoying anywhere, I heard at the gym, you get a little extra bump from the lozenge and from the gum.
Boom. It's 2020. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges. This is the real deal, and a subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple, you don't even have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down.
Reality NSFW listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code SURVIVOR to get 20% off all products, including gum and lozenges. That's Lucy, LUCY.co. That's right, CO, and use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Also, I have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. So that's lucy.co, and be sure to use that promo code SURVIVOR, and we thank them for sponsoring the Reality NSFW podcast. This episode of Reality NSFW is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us, Blue Chew. Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer lasting erections. That's right. We're giving away super hard dicks.
Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED.
Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so no visits to the doctor offices, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. And it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. And the best part, it's all done online.
BlueChew's licensed medical providers work with you to find the right ingredient and strength for your prescription. Don't like swallowing pills? No problem here. BlueChew's Sildenafil and Tadalafil tablets are chewable. Blue Chew's tablets are made in the USA, and they prepare and ship direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy.
Hey, if you're looking to give that immunity idol to someone, or you don't want to be voted out of a crater, Don't worry, Blue Chew's got you covered. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information.
And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use promo code SURVIVOR at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's Blue Chew, BlueChew.com, promo code SURVIVOR to receive your first month free. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.